I knew that I had a bigger purpose. I knew that I was going to be living during a very...
This episode of the Modern Witch Podcast is brought to you by Horticulture, a premier online event celebrating green magic in all its forms. This year, we have live and downloadable workshops by international best-selling authors and plant magic aficionados like Aaron Murphy Hiscock, Juliet Diaz, Eva Dominguez Jr., Amy Blackthorne, Kobe Michael, Jesse Hathaway Diaz, and me, Devin Hunter. Attendees get access to a private year-long Discord server, a digital grimoire featuring over 10 hours of additional bonus content from our presenters, and VIP access to the Rare and Magical Plant Marketplace. Horticulture happens April 23rd and 24th, with part of the proceeds benefiting the Nature Conservancy. Whether you're into herbs and the poison path, sacred gardening and ecology, rewilding your indoor space, or just want to meet other green magicians to share tips and cuttings, Horticulture is for you. Find out more at horticulture.com. That's HORTOCCULTURE.com or modernwitch.com. And act now. Early bird tickets are available only until March 20th. Horticulture, a celebration of green magic in all its forms, April 23rd and 24th, presented by Modern Witch.
What is that? It's a little bag made from the skin of a toad.
Does it matter? She's tampering in dark sided stuff!
Yet in our own supremely rational time, there has been a dramatic rebirth of the ancient arts of witchcraft.
You're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast with Devin Hunter.
And welcome back to the Modern Witch Podcast. I'm your host, Devin Hunter. Thank you so much for tuning in, for downloading, for subscribing, for liking. All of those things definitely help, especially when, you know, you put something out with a .com and on the social medias like Facebook, and then it's like $15,000 if you want one person to see it. And I don't have that. I don't know about you. I mean, if you're interested in donating $15,000, I would love to hear about that. I doubt I'd be spending it on Facebook, though. But I'm here for you. I'm here for you. I'm here for your dreams. And if your dreams is to give me $15,000, then my dream is to take it. And we can dream together. And I like sharing a dream with people. Once again, thank you for tuning into the Modern Witch Podcast. I'm your host, Devin Hunter. So I'm told that when I do the show, I don't promote my books enough, which I don't know. I always feel like I'm throwing too many promotions at you because I'm like, hey, here's this festival I'm doing, or hey, here's my store, you know, so I don't know. And then I also started saying, yeah, you can throw an ad and be, you know, in my show, because I would also like ad revenue. That would be lovely. But I just feel like I throw too much stuff at you. But if you didn't know, I've written books. I've actually written quite a few. Devin Hunter, who is the author of the Witch Power series. You can get that on Llewellyn, or you can go to my website. You can get that really anywhere, which is the Witch's Book of Power, the Witch's Book of Spirits, and the Witch's Book of Mysteries. And I also wrote Modern Witch, Spells, Recipes, and Workings, which is a full-color, absolutely stunning, gorgeous tome of a little book that you can get, full of spells and recipes and workings and all kinds of fun stuff. And you can find that everywhere. And it's right now on a lot of Barnes & Noble end caps. So you should definitely go check it out. It would mean the world to not just me, but to your local bookseller if you went in and you purchased a book. It's a great thing, buying books. Books. I wrote them. Go check them out. On today's show, we have got Kobe Michael, who is a really fantastic person. This season, I'm really trying to bring people who can just kind of keep it real, and especially when, there's just so much not realness going on the internet. Like, so many people are just putting off just like this fake witchy stuff, and I'm just like, meh. Meh. And I know that you're like meh because we're just kind of over it. I think part of the fatigue of like just getting back on our feet is just rejecting all the fake, right? So anyway, as always, we are keeping it real here on the Modern Witch Podcast with some real cool guests, like today's guest, Kobe Michael. And if you don't know what the Poisoner's Apothecary is, if you haven't stumbled upon Kobe's work, you should definitely check out the show notes where it's all going to be listed. In addition to being one of the featured guests this year at Horticulture, Kobe also has his own event that is happening actually in just a few weeks from the post of this show. So you should definitely be checking out all of the links in the show notes. We're going to talk about all of this and more on this episode of the Modern Witch Podcast. And all of it, it wouldn't be possible without you listening and subscribing and telling your friends. And thank you for sharing last week's episode. I really appreciate it. It was so cool to see. And I love hearing your thoughts about the show. So always feel free to like at me. Totally here for that. Also, I want to give a shout out to everyone over on the Patreon. I love you. I will see you on Thursday when we have Witch and Bitch. And I got a story to tell you. I have a story that I'm going to share that is going to rock your socks. We're doing ghost stories this week, and I'm excited. So anyway, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being here. Thank you, whether you're here because I put a show out and you already follow and subscribe and you said, hey, here's the new show. Let's download and listen. Or you're here for Kobe Michael. Either way, thank you, thank you, thank you. And yeah. All right, anyway, I'll shut up. We'll be right back after this break with Kobe Michael. This is Modern Witch. I'm Devin Hunter. See you on the flip side.
That girl is
if I were you, I'd take precaution.
Stop! It's poison! Don't drink it!
What?
Merlin, what are you doing?
Bayard laced Arthur's goblet with poison.
This is an outrage!
You know what I mean?
So I think it's built into him, yeah.
Yeah, it's tripping. It's, and I'm like, aha, there's something going on there. There's proof of intelligence of some kind. Trippy. So I am going to surprise. I want to tell you, I ordered something from you. Like, let's see, it says July and I have it. I have the box here. It's been in my botanical room all of this time unopened because I forgot it. I forgot that I had ordered it from you. I forgot that it arrived. And I remembered it the other day because I came across it and I went, oh my God, I have this thing. But then I remembered that you were coming on the show. So I thought, we're going to do an unboxing today while I have you here on product that I ordered 7 months ago. And
wow, what a surprise.
And I'm like, I would hate it if anybody did this to me, but I know that nothing I ordered from you like had an immediate like self life or anything like that. So, I want to talk about, well, I guess we're going to find out. But I want to talk about Poisoner's Apothecary and all of your wonderful work. And I thought, oh, how perfect is this that I can maybe do this unboxing? Cause I ordered it from you right as you were like, right before you moved, I think is what it was or something like that. Or you were in the process of doing something, but I remember you were going through some change and you were writing about it. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go check out his shop. And then I saw this shit and I was like, oh my God, he has the good stuff. Like he makes the really good stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
But I, of course, it left it in a box. So it's insane. But anyway, so we're going to, at some point in our episode today, I am going to do an unboxing podcast. Usually people do unboxing videos, but you know, we're going to do a little something different. And you have your own event coming up too. So we have a lot to talk about. We have like so much shit to talk about. I'm going to start it off with, I am a super big fan of obviously anybody who's a plant person. Like I, you know, there's a love that's there. People, same thing for the crystal people. People who have aligned their lives to working with a certain type of spirit. I find those people fascinating to me. And you're not just a plant spirit person, you're a poison plant spirit person. And I think a lot of people don't know, and this is like literally when I decided that I wanted to do horticulture, you were instantly the person I wanted to cover the poison stuff. Because in my head, it's like Hogwarts. And so I've got, you know, I got one person who's going to be really good at this stuff and one person who's going to be really good at this stuff. And you were the poison person instantly. And so I was so just pleased when you were like, yeah, totally, I'll do it. And so we definitely want to talk about, you know, horticulture and things like that.
But you also have this event coming up, and you don't just plan an event if you're like into something sort of. Like, if you're going to do an event, you're going to be into the topic. Like, you're going to, if this is going to be not just part of your hobbies, there's going to be part of your personality that's tied up into this. I've been throwing events for a while. This is kind of what I've come to the conclusion of. So when I heard about your event, I got instantly excited because we're talking about a subject matter within occultism that I think the poison path has its fans and people who like the aesthetic. And then I think there are the people who really have cultivated a relationship with it, right? Obviously, you fall into that second camp. Obviously, the people who you seem to attract to your work are part of that second camp. And I'm really fascinated with this, and that you have this community of people who surround your work and who surround your store, who seems to be authentic practitioners. You know, I'm part of your Facebook group. Everybody, there's going to be a link in the show notes to his Facebook group. And I find some of the funnest conversations are happening and within that group. And I find that you're posting some of the best content, really, in occultism, because it's like practical. Here's real useful stuff, not some meme that's, you know, a picture of a thing, right? Mm-hmm. You're doing the work, you're putting it out there. I'm saying all this because I want to know what the secret is. I want to know how you have been able to not just stay true to your love of plants and the poison path, but you've also been able to have this community that created around you and your work. I think that's really cool. I think it's really fascinating. And I think that that's something that we don't really see a whole lot of. So I want to know what the secret is to that. How do you love what you do and still have this cool community of people who are interested in it?
Oh gosh. Well, I am really lucky to have such an awesome community, you know, just like seeing other discussion groups and just other things on social media. Like, it's really scary, like having this group of, you know, however many thousand people that are interacting with each other and trying to like keep track of that. But it's a really, really awesome, nice, everybody's very nice in the discussion group. I try and keep it, you know, educational, like nobody sells anything. It's all about the plants and the passion. And I think that's maybe the secret and where it kind of comes from, and you know, how other people have sort of noticed what I'm doing is just because I really do have like a complete and utter passion and obsession for it, you know, to the point where like I'll work myself to exhaustion doing all of these different things and trying to come out with new content and new formulas and, you know, balancing just all of the stuff that comes with like running an e-commerce online business. And it just comes down to the passion. And I'm a fire sign. I'm a Leo with an Aries moon. So just lots of fire energy, creativity, and drive. I call it my motivational anxiety.
That's your furnace. There you go.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it just keeps me going. You know, I'm always afraid that I'm going to become irrelevant, or that it somehow won't be enough, or that I'm not, you know, giving enough information or sharing enough things. And it's just a constant fire under me that's kind of like driving me to do this. And I'm also just really interested and passionate in what I do, that like a lot of the stuff that people see that I'm sharing and whatnot, you know, is coming from me going into little research holes where I look up one thing and then it leads into another thing and then that thing. And then it's just all of these really, really cool things. And that's what I share with people. And the poison path has been like this really awesome onion, just in how I keep peeling back all of these like deeper layers to it and finding like all of this new meaning. And it's just really, really amazing.
Yeah, no, I love that. So where did it all begin with you? And I mean, I hate to ask like what's your origin story question, but I mean, plants are like, I was just talking to Aaron Murphy Hiscock and we were talking about how plants are, you know, usually it's either you have like a childhood experience with plants And so it becomes part of your just personality and, you know, kind of just the type of person you become because you were exposed so young to plants and working with plants, like, you know, your mom has a garden or so, whatever. But then there's some of us that come to it totally from the perspective of like, oh, I'm into herbs and wouldn't it just be easier to grow this instead of buying it, or cheaper to just grow this instead of buying it? And then that starts the experience. Like, what was it for you that kind of started the itch that you had to go scratch?
Yeah. So like when I was younger, there was like a handful of topics that I was just very like fascinated and obsessed with. So it was like Egyptology, astronomy, plants. Like I couldn't get enough of any of that. And I grew up, not with my grandparents, but they were the ones that did all the gardening and really exposed me to working with plants. And just remember like my grandpa always telling stories about his mom and how they lived on a farm and how she would work in her garden every day. And she knew where like all of the raspberry bushes were and all of the like the good nut plants, because I guess there were bad nut plants too. Just really had like this intimate kind of connection with the land. And that's something that's always kind of stuck with me, you know, growing up in like a conservative Christian household, but having this ancestor that was, you know, more in touch with the land than, you know, probably most animistic practitioners are today. You know, so that was like my first exposure to plants and herbs. And I was just really interested in them, not even so much from a magical point of view, I guess, earlier on. I remember like some of my first books that I read about them were just like natural remedy manuals that my grandma had at her house. And for whatever reason, that was just really interesting to me at like 10, 11 years old. And one thing kind of led to another. And, you know, this is going on like simultaneously to my growing interest in witchcraft and magic and the occult, you know, which has been around almost as long as my interest in plants.
I was going to say, yeah, it sounds like your witch power reached out and was like, there's something to do here with these plants. And boom, that's the connection. I think this is beautiful. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm saying a lot today. So the process of working with poison plants is unique. And I know most people never even go there. I would say like 90% of witches won't even go there. Even fewer will try to grow them themselves. And I have some that I do really well with and some I do not do well with. And part of that's just my climate and where I'm at. Like I don't want to really grow belladonna in the house. You know, we've got a bunch of pets and things like that. And, you know, so I can't, but growing it outside is almost impossible here because it's so dry. So, you know, so I have this weird, like I have some that I do really well with. I have some that I don't do well with. And it's something that I have just learned to be very careful with. Like I do really good with growing mushrooms and I do really good with Brugmansias and any of the Datura's I do really well with. But I gotta be really careful, you know, with what I can grow here and some of the stuff that I would love to grow, there's just no way like that I could. So I wonder for you, you seem to have a really well-developed and diverse portfolio when it comes to working with specifically like the poison stuff. And you write about things that I had never even heard of. And you're often, you know, I love that you love Datura's and Brugmansias as much as you do, because they're like such a favorite plant of mine. So following you is like witch porn, you know, it's like, oh, there's that sexy Brugmansia. Look at that. Look at the bells, you know? So I guess my thing is like, with the, like, how did you end up developing such a diverse portfolio when it came to your understanding of this? Because they're poisonous plants. Like they're not something that are meant to be touched necessarily. Right. And there are a few people who can really do that, let alone have a whole portfolio of experiences and knowledge there. And I think that that's something that is very unique about you. And so I wonder, like, how did, like, where does that come from?
Oh, well, thank you. I couldn't imagine my practice or my life without them now that they're here. You know, they are the very spirits that I associate with magic and witchcraft, and the very spirits that I seek to connect with in my practice. And, you know, their mythology is representative of that. And I've just tapped into, you know, whatever current is kind of going back and forth between poisonous plants and witchcraft. And yeah, it's just been really like representative of witchcraft in general for me. So I can't imagine not having them. As far as like the diversity of my portfolio, you know, I started growing them, I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago now, you know, just out of interest, because they're really cool to look at and just different. They're not, you know, your run-of-the-mill garden ornamentals. Well, some of them are, you know, foxgloves and things like that, but they're just really cool looking. And as kind of in simultaneously growing them and researching their mythology and just getting all of this sort of, you know, cross-referencing insight just through osmosis, through reading about the plants while I'm growing them, was really what kind of like spurred me onto this. And I don't know what it was that really clicked or that I really tapped into where I was just, you know, I was like, this is it. Like, this is just it for me. Now I'm saying a lot too.
it's like yawning. It's totally contagious. So I get it. So like you're saying that, like with me, I always say like, I don't understand how people could practice witchcraft without having like a total relationship with a bunch of different spirits. Like it just doesn't, because to me that is witchcraft. And so you're saying that's like, it's like that, but with plants for you, like you don't see the two of them as separate things. And I totally respect that, because it also talks about that kind of intuitive relationship, you know, that it's hard to write about. Like I tell people all the time, like the hardest part about writing a book, and I think why so many people and want to write witchcraft books and then never get a chance to, is because we have to take this thing that we do really quite instinctively, and we have to explain it in a way that other people can duplicate it. And that's really fucking hard. Like that's a really difficult thing to do. And I got my hand on a copy of your book, and which super stoked about. And you've done a good job at that. You've done a good job at helping bridge those gaps, especially with a topic that, you know, I think it's a squeamish topic. You know, you've got these things that are going to affect your physical body in a way that most of us try to avoid, right? Like that's a thing, but we're doing it for a purpose. We're doing it for a reason. And I find that particular field of study, so to speak, really fascinating. Like the reasoning behind why to work with poison plants. So for you, it's an interest, and it's something that, you know, developed out of a curiosity. But for me, you know, I see a lot of, like, I would say my first, which is so funny because back in the day it was considered a poison plant, but I don't know that people would consider it a poison plant today, marijuana. Right. So yes. We would say, you know, working with marijuana has helped out so many ways. It's also been a negative influence in some people's lives. It's totally just say with opium, right? A lot of pain medication comes from opium, but we obviously know that the opium poppy, and we obviously know that that has its own ramifications in cultures and society. So a lot of the stuff that's like considered to be poison, if it's used in a way that's not going to like kill you, then it's usually kind of stigmatized, right? As a drug or mm-hmm. as something that we are not supposed to work with recreationally, let alone communally or spiritually or any of those other things. So there's these stigmas that come with the poison plants. What are some of those, like, what have you found to be like the challenges when you're trying to introduce stuff like the like poisonous plants to people? What have been those stigmas that you've had to kind of break down?
Usually people are pretty open, you know, when they come to me about things, and I think the biggest one is just like the level of toxicity with things, and just like the level of like instinctual fear that we have when it comes to certain plants that are deemed poisonous, and that it's almost treated as like a radioactive substance or some type of like contagion, and you know, that its poisonous nature is passed on, you know, as easily as something like poison ivy. Well, with the plants that can kill you, that's generally not the case. And so just kind of like dispelling that fear, explaining to people that, you know, poison can mean something as innocuous as like a tummy ache, or it gave you a rash or something like that. It doesn't always ultimately mean death, and that there is a very kind of wide spectrum there when it comes to low dose plants or potent plants, and just try to reinforce to people that the very same substances that make the plant poisonous are also what make it medicinal. And poisonous plants are where we get some of our most important, our most powerful, and our most useful medicines.
I love it. Okay. So I think I'm going to open up this box right now. I'm going to open this box, and I don't remember what I ordered. I'm sure you
don't remember either.
All right. So this is from Poisoner's Apothecary. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Poisoner's Apothecary while I'm opening this box?
Yeah, Poisoner's Apothecary is my online website. It's also an educational resource on the poison path. From the product standpoint, it is all of the different formulas, ointments, ritual oils, flower essences, using poisonous plants, other various ethnobotanicals that have a history in ceremony and ritual. So pretty much everything on there is inspired by the plants, and sort of gives people an idea of all of the different ways that we can work with them. You know, so I have the entheogenic formulas that are for, you know, topical application or ingestion for the actual, you know, like psychoactive quotation marks properties. And then I also have products that are more ritual artifacts, talismanic jewelry, also containing plant material to connect with them, work with the spirits on a different level.
This is awesome. Okay. So I've opened the box, mm-hmm. and packaging is super cute, and it's instantly like, well, you'll see, people. I don't want to spoil that part because I think that's like one of the best parts. Okay. So it looks as though I have, there's something still to open up here, which I think is an ointment, but I have Ink of the Green Devil here that I'm looking at, which is in a really cute bottle. It's green. Of course. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna have you tell us about these products that I have bought that I'm looking at here right now. So tell me, what can I expect with Ink of the Green Devil?
Yeah, that is one of my infused ritual inks. So it is used for working with plant spirits, pact making, writing various petitions that would have to do with working with a specific familiar spirit. Also, kind of drawing what's called plant spirit glyphs, which are basically sigils that represent the various plant spirits. And this one has deer's tongue, mandrake, elderberry, oak, fern, and woodruff. So just the one baneful herb is kind of a more foresty kind of a vibe.
I know exactly what I'm going to do with this. That's super cool. Okay. The next thing here is tincture, mascariae, 1 to 10. So this is a Amanita mascara tincture. This is specifically the thing I'm like, I'm getting that. Because first of all, Amanita mascara is not, you can't get it in the US. Like I can't get the spores. I have tried. And then even when you can, in the cases, get the spores to grow it, it's very, very difficult to grow. It does not like to be a tamed mushroom necessarily. So I thought it was just fascinating that you had it and you had the actual legit thing. So kudos to you on that, because it's very hard to find here in the States. But tell us, okay, so first of all, when we're talking about tinctures, what does 1 to 10 mean? Because I think that's something that everybody should know. So like, what does that 1 to 10 mean?
Yeah, that is the mixing ratio. So it means that there is 1 gram of plant material for every 10 milliliters of tincture.
And what can I expect with this tincture of the Amanita muscaria?
So with that ratio, you've got, it's about, I think, 1.5 or 3 grams, depending on the size of the bottle that you got. So it is for microdosing. Amanita is great for inducing trance. It is a very celestial kind of time-oriented mushroom, dealing with retrieving memories, past lives, things like that. The experience is generally like very fractal and geometric. So somebody would take that to connect with the Amanita muscaria spirits, for ritual purposes, or people also will microdose with it to help with anxiety, insomnia, depression. I like it also for focus, so I'll take it during the day. It's not something that's going to like make you sleepy or anything like that, but it actually has like a motivational quality about it too.
I'm really looking forward to working with that. I remembered that I got it and why I got it, and I'm excited. Okay. So the last thing is deadly nightshade ointment. And so this is a belladonna ointment, and I'm just going to ask, because this has been something I get in trouble for when I make flying ointments. Is this do you include like animal product, or do you use like all plant product?
Yeah, all of my products are vegan. I use the carnauba wax.
Me too. Okay, so I don't use that, but everything mine is vegan, and I get like, I got so much shit, Kobe. I got so much shit from the Tradcraft people when I came out with my vegan flying ointment. Oh my God. So much shit, because I wasn't boiling up lard. And I'm like, or fucking beef fat. I'm like, do you know how much that shit stinks? Like do it once, like that's fine. But at some point you just realize like you can get like really refined, nice products that are meant to go on your skin that have sometimes even a better fat content. And you don't have to deal with like killing an animal and do all that kind of shit, if I'm not going to kill it, there's that same connection isn't there. And then B, the stench, it fucking stinks like to make that shit. People do not realize how badly everything reeks when you have to do that. So I make mine vegan, and I thought yours were vegan too. And that's really impressive. Like, I just think as like just somebody who's like legitimately doing this to have something to do that, I think is brilliant, and it's more practical and the shelf life is longer.
Yes. That being said, I did make an animal based ointment just as like a demonstration, educational purposes kind of thing. When you get into like the extraction and absorption and differences between like vegetable carriers and animal fats and things like that. So I have made them before, but I don't offer any animal products on the website beyond like bones and things.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone should learn to do it because it's a technique, right? And there is tradition behind it. So I think everybody should learn to do it. I think you should do it at least once. You should learn how that smells, and learn that some things are better done outside. But I just think in general, because a lot of the times when you can find flying ointments, like I quit offering them because of this. But when you can find them, they're not vegan, and so it's a whole thing, and I don't, and like I'm not here for animal cruelty, like that's not my beef. My beef literally is it stinks, the shelf life is shorter, and I don't like the way it makes my skin feel. Like I don't like putting animal fat on my skin. It feels weird and greasy, and I'm just not here for that necessarily. So because that shit matters, like, okay, because I'll tell you why. I had a flying ointment experience. It was very intense. And at one point I became very body conscious, like very aware of how my skin felt, and it was covered in grease. And that was not a pleasant experience. It actually took what would have been a very beautiful experience to turn it into a very bad experience. So I'm just like, I was over it. After that, I was like, done. Was like, nope. Like I want to work with this stuff but not have a bad experience because of the way I prepared it or that kind of a thing. So anyway, I digress. That's my reasoning. Okay, so what can I expect with this deadly nightshade ointment?
So I describe it as, it's very grounding, very almost heavy. So we use it for spirit flight, but in the case of nightshades and herbs that are chthonic or associated with the underworld, it's more of an inward, downward kind of a movement with the energy and the flight. So with that, I like to put it on the soles of my feet, my underarms, my chest, and it's just a very almost like cocooning type of a sensation. You'll sleep really, really deep. And it's generally going to be filled with dreams. I don't remember a lot of the dreams that I have just because I'm a regular cannabis user. But when I use the deadly nightshade ointment, I remember my dreams.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So that there you go. Especially for the people, because that's been a complaint that people have had about when they start working with marijuana medicinally. And cannabis medicinally and not being able to have the same dream experiences. And that's been a complaint. So that's good to know. Okay. Well, I'm really excited. I'm definitely going to, I'm going to plan for it, but I'm really excited about this tincture. And I already know, I know why I got your Green Devil ink while I'm looking at it now. And we're talking about it. I know exactly why I got it. It's because I have a little project I'm doing. So super fun. I'm really excited about it. So everybody, you should definitely go check out Kobe's store, which is poisonersapothecary.com or the poison, sorry, thepoisonapothecary.com. So let's talk about your book, because there's so many things to talk about real quick. But and I, you know, I don't usually want to harp on people's books necessarily, but this is a really cool book. And I think it does make what is normally a very inaccessible topic accessible. So first of all, how did you, like, because anything that was remotely toxic, I got beef from my publisher about when I would write about stuff. So you're writing about some like stuff that I totally could never get away with working with Llewellyn. And it's just because every company's got their own thing. And Llewellyn has had issues with this in the past. So they're really shy about what we can put in, what we can't put in our books. I think it's so cool that you have an entire book of stuff I could never write about. So I don't want to say like, what was your inspiration? We obviously know what your inspiration for writing this was. Let me ask you this. How fun was it to write this book?
It's so much fun. I would do it again.
Well, hopefully you do.
I'm working on it now.
Yay. Good. Cause it's a good book. It's a good book. Was there like a favorite part you had about the whole process or any of that kind of stuff that you want to share?
Well, it actually came from like a really bad type of scenario that landed me in a not very good place. And I just had a lot of time on my hands. And then I had all of this research and information and like experiential information. And I was finally able to start like putting it together. And, you know, a lot of it is practical and, you know, the practical standpoint is very important to a lot of people. And, you know, wanting to use them on a more intimate level, entheogenically, and getting into dosing and things like that. So that was very important just to help provide that or kind of add to that conversation. But then it also sort of taps into, and just like what I was saying earlier about the poisonous plants being sort of like representative of the type of witchcraft that I practice. And that's what a lot of the more abstracts, like esoteric part of the book, like the whole first half of it is me trying to articulate those different connections that we see when we study the mythology of these plants.
It's chock full of information. I mean, there's a lot to it. And I think it's, again, it's the place to start. If you are wanting to get into working with baneful herbs, like this really is the place to start. Cause it's all there. Like, I mean, it's a lot of the stuff that you would have to comb through multiple books and find rare blah, blah, blahs that were expensive. And, you know, it's all here. Like you extract the need to know and you add good, valuable personal gnosis. And it's really a treat. So it's very, you know, it's a niche book. It's a exclusive thing that is hard to find information on. So everybody definitely go check out The Poison Path Herbal by Kobe Michael. And that's really, it's a really cool one. What was it like working with Park Street Press?
It's been amazing. Like they weren't actually my original publisher and it was kind of a blessing that I wound up switching. And like the editing team has been great. Marketing has been great, helping with different promotional events and getting different interviews. But it was my realization that they happen to have like this really amazing selection of books, like Psychedelic Spirituality, the Encyclopedia of Psychoactive Plants, like all of these books that are kind of in the same realm of what I'm doing, but not exactly the same. So it's really cool to be with a company that has those other authors as well.
Yeah, it definitely helps to have peers. It definitely helps to have people who are into the same stuff that are on that team and that your publisher's familiar with. That changes the game. It really, truly does. Okay, so let's talk about your festival, your event that you started. This is the first year?
This is the first year, yeah.
Super exciting. I know I'm going to be there. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about the impetus for this. Like what you're taking and combining a lot of Poison Path aficionados, right? And you're putting them together for this event. You don't see this anywhere else. So that's great. So again, I'm not going to ask, why are you doing this? We know why you're doing this. And I'm not going to ask how fun it is because I know it's a lot of work. Then the fun comes mostly in the process and after the fact. What I'm going to ask is, what is your intention with setting this space for the first time, like for now and for the years to come? What is your intention with setting this space?
I wanted to create a community kind of event for other people like me to come together and share their individual knowledge, but also to kind of share our collective knowledge and have, you know, a discussion amongst ourselves as well. And that's part of the event too. And just kind of talking about, you know, what the Poison Path is, where we see it going. And, you know, it's not limited just to the Poison Path because we have a lot of people with, you know, backgrounds in ethnobotany and other different types of entheogenic study too. So it's a really diverse group of people. And, you know, I really would like to one day get to a point where I'm doing more in-person plant ceremonies, you know, with all different types of plant medicine. And this was kind of like me sort of aiming in that direction, but wanting to also like provide a space for other people. And like so many people in the community have like supported me over, you know, these past few years or whatever, and shown an interest in the work that I'm doing. So if I'm able to help kind of spotlight their work and, you know, bring that to the forefront, then, you know, that's what I want to do. And that's what this is really all about.
I'm here for it. I think it's awesome. So that's Botanica Obscura. And if we were going to point anybody, like where are you pointing people to find out more about the event and to get tickets?
Yeah, so all of the event information you can find on the website, which is botanicaobscuraconference.com. That's got all of the presenters, keynote speaker presentation information. The tickets are actually on sale through Eventbrite.
Bada boom, bada boom. Yeah. It's all there. That's really cool. Okay, so we're gonna take just a moment to have a quick break, everybody, and we'll be right back. Stay tuned. For the witch who is diving into plants, who maybe is new on their journey, maybe they've only been around for a couple of years and they just bought a couple of house plants and have started maybe putting some plants out on their balcony in their apartment for the first time, and they hear about the Poison Path and there's an interest there. What can those witches do in a space that's enclosed like that? What can they do? How can they approach the Poison Path?
I'll approach it with an open mind and, you know, a healthy level of fear. It never hurt anybody, but, you know, not being overly fearful. I'm just kind of asking yourself, you know, what is it that is drawing you to the poison path? Is it, you know, wanting to look in more into psychedelic spirituality and altered states of consciousness? Or are you attracted to, you know, sort of that darker, more taboo, poisonous aspect? You know, there's all of these different like angles that we can approach it from. So just kind of looking at it broadly, and then deciding like what is the area of interest, or, you know, the drawing factor. You know, because some people will be drawn to it for some sort of healing or something that they need to work through personally, like a shadow work perspective. And other people come at it from a wholly other direction.
Do you find that one of those directions suits you more than another?
I think that my interest was always from an occult standpoint, from magical practice. You know, for me, it was always about the plants sort of represented like the same power and potency that witchcraft represented for me. You know, it was never about healing. It was about survival. It was about, you know, getting through and accumulating as much power as possible so that you can, you know, fight all the people that are against you, sort of a thing. And kind of through that, it's kind of allowed me to work through some of my things. Through kind of what's reflected in helping other people, kind of guiding other people, or at least, you know, kind of having this vantage point where I'm able to, you know, see a lot of what's going on in the community and different ways that people are working with the plants and different realizations that they're having. And it's been like a whole personal growth process for me too.
I love that. I love how real you are about that, because that's such an important, like, I didn't come here to hug a tree. Like, I no, sir. I came to witchcraft because I had a lot of odds stacked against me. I mean, and, you know, I obviously there was the whole intuitively drawn to shit kind of thing, but mm-hmm. I stuck around and, you know, witchcraft saved my life. And I come from a, you know, as I've said many times on the show and in my books, like, you know, I come from a place that, not a lot of people have a lot of opportunities or can get out of. And witchcraft was my avenue, my road that helped get me out of that. And so, you know, for me, witchcraft, you know, when people are like, oh, they're spiritual, blah, 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 I'm like, well, witchcraft can be spiritual, like in that religious way. It can absolutely be that if that's what you want, because your witchcraft can be whatever the fuck you want it to be. I don't care what it is, you know. Are you a witch? Cool. Let's be friends. Like, I don't, you know, it doesn't bother me. But the rest of it, we're drawn to these things because we need to level the playing field. That's really what happens, right? And it's one of those things that I think a lot of people, when you talk about like why you're drawn to the craft or why you came to the craft, there tends to be this need or this desire to sugarcoat it and make it this like ascension spiritual thing. And it's like, for me, it was like, no, I needed tools. I knew that witches had power that normal people didn't have. And I was there for that. Like, that is what I wanted, and answers to like my crazy psychic shit. But I really wanted that power.
Yeah.
And what that looks like has completely changed from what it looked like when I was a teenager, right? Like, it isn't about money and it isn't about having men who, you know, I had control over so that no one could have control over me or hit me or, you know, any of those other things that, you know, were very real for me at the time. I got over that, right? I was able to realize I don't need those people in my life. I don't need this shit going on. This is drama, you know, like eventually that clicked in, but that was not possible until I was in a very different place in my life. And so witchcraft really got me through, you know, in so many ways. And I get frustrated when people get angry when you're real about why you're there. And like I posted this thing on Twitter and I had to take it down because it caused this shit storm. But I said, oh, are you a witch who asks for permission? Or are you a witch who doesn't believe you need permission? And like me, and because I'm like, well, then what's the point? Like, if I need to ask permission to stop, you know, from the rapist to stop the rapist from raping people, it's never going to happen. Like, I'm not going to, no, that's not, that doesn't equate in my brain. I've never asked for permission from anything with magic. You know, if somebody can come and say, hey, I'm going to, would you know, I need some healing. Okay. You know, I'll send you some healing, but I'm not going to ask your permission. Right. If I know you're my best friend and you're sick in a hospital, I'm not going to call you up and go, may I send you some healing? No, bitch, my ass is down. I am summoning up spirits. I am making offerings. There is shit going on. Like, I'm not going to. So it really like the, just that whole thing that we tend to have, like, and then people, as I'm saying, you know, no, I don't ask for permission. I just do it. Then I'm accused of basically being a rapist because I'm not asking for consent. And it's people like me that ... And it went into this whole thing. And I just was like, wait, okay. We are not functioning from the same definition of witchcraft.
No, that's a whole other level of baggage. Like,
right. So I just love the realness. I love that you're real about that because I'm real about it. And I know I get shit for it. So, so if you get shit for it, just know you are not alone. And there's so more many people and everybody, I think everybody listening to this episode right now came to witchcraft because they needed help with something, right? They needed to amass some sort of assistance at a time when they weren't going to get it from anywhere else. And so I think when we're honest about that, and we're real about it, that we can keep witchcraft honest and real. But it's when we change it into something that it's not, that witchcraft, you know, like it's, I kind of miss when people were afraid of witches. I'm not going to lie. It kept everyone in their place. And now it's like, you know, oh, they don't want to be called witches. They want to be called Wiccans. No, that is not correct, sir. Do not call me a Wiccan. I'm not a Wiccan.
I don't want to be socially acceptable. I don't want to make the Christians comfortable or
not
anything
that.
Like that, because a lot of my worldview and my witchcraft comes from working against those very people, because, you know, I was a very sensitive kid, a very loving kid, very, you know, close to nature and empathetic and just wanting to like heal others and things like this. And I get thrown into this world where I'm demonized for all of those things. And so I decided that I wasn't going to let them do that, and that I was going to take all of the power back.
I decided to be the demon. That was my thing. I was like, if you're going to, because I mean, we're talking like I had exorcisms performed on me, like the whole, cause we're Midwest Pentecostal crazy shit.
Yeah.
And, I had all that shit thrown at me, and I just realized at one point it was the last time any of the really bad, crazy shit happened. In the middle of it, I had all these men praying around me, and I start laughing because it was so uncomfortable. And all I could do was laugh while they're trying to give me an exorcism, which just reinforced to them that there was something really wrong going on. But
right.
I decided in that moment, I was like, no, all right, well, listen, I like boys. There's no getting around this. I like boys. I'd already had sex with a boy. I liked the way that went. That wasn't going to change. I knew that wasn't going to change. I also knew that there was nothing wrong with me and that I was a good person and that I was a caring and compassionate person. And those people had told me that themselves, that I was such a kind, caring, compassionate person. So you can't change that, right? Just because of whatever. So for me, I just was like, okay, well, if this is what you think I am, then I'm just going to be this. And it served me well, you know, for quite some time. And it wasn't to be like a bitch monster. That's not the demon that, you know, that I needed to be. It was the free thinking, obviously queer guy who was sensitive, obviously spiritually awake, you know, awake in a way that didn't make sense to him and was looking for answers, and the church wasn't helping me with anything. Obviously in a bad home situation, right? All of those things were used against me by these people. So I'm going to use that. I'm going to wear that and be that and let that be where I draw my power from. Right. And what I found was, while I was certain, and I know the same has to be true for you because of things that you've written about, what I found was when I got through my shit, and I'm still going through it. So I mean, it's not like it's like a never, it's a never ending baggage of like a package of baggage that I just, you know, we're all adults. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. But, you know, I'm going through it, you know, thinking about stuff. And I'm like, I am proud of myself. I am so proud of myself. And I never thought I was ever going to be in a place to say this as just knowing where I come from and what, you know, what I got out of. And like, I'm very proud of myself and it's not an ego thing. It's a, like, you did it, kid, kind of a thing. And I don't have any regrets. I don't regret the curses I've put on people for getting in my way and for hurting people. I don't regret the long nights of ritual that I did to help move obstacles out of my way. I don't regret fasting for days on end to make things manifest for my, you know, like, I don't regret any of this shit. I don't regret leaving Ohio and moving to California and I don't regret any of that. I have no regrets because witchcraft has taught me what regrets do, right? Witchcraft has taught me not to live with regrets. And so I can move through my life very confident in who I am, but that also means that I'm going to piss people off. I'm going to scare people and people are going to feel awkward around me. And I got to find people who that isn't the truth about, right? That isn't true for, but for the average person, that is the truth. And it is that very thing. It's my queerness. It's my love of the occult. It's my psychicness. It's my hell. Honestly, I think at this, it's the way how queer my voice gets. You know, it's all the things. They would find a reason to fucking string me up and kill me, right? If we were lived in 18, whatever, they would find a way to call me a witch and kill me anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So, like as you say, I'm not going to make these people comfortable. It isn't about, they've made me uncomfortable my whole damn life. I owe them nothing. You know who I owe something to? Me. Because while I was giving them everything, I was taking so much away from myself. And I'm not doing that, right? Especially not in my 30s. That's not happening in my 40s. And I'll be damned if that's the reality in my 50s, you know? And that's just it. So for me, witchcraft has been this thing that's been like, you know, I have Cancer moon. I have a Cancer rising, a Pisces moon, and I'm a Sagittarius. So on the outward, I'm very talkative and I'm very, you know, outgoing, but on the inside, I'm this like squishy guy. And I'm very squishy. And I have learned that people use that against me. People will use that squishiness against me. They'll use my compassion against me. And I got sour about it at one point and I became this like kind of shadow person, like this dark kind of person, because I was sick of being used up like that. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I didn't have to live like that. Like witchcraft teaches me that I don't have to live like that. And I just have to change the name of the game. And so, you know, for me, witchcraft has been this thing that isn't a religion or a spiritual path or a way of life or a hobby or just an interest. Like it's everything. Like I can't differentiate my life from the craft. And when I hear you talk about your craft, I hear the same thing. You know, I'm hearing somebody who like the craft formulated your life just as much as you have formulated that craft. And hearing those people's stories, those are always the fascinating ones because we all had to grow up quickly. It's always that we all grew up way too quick, and we're all very sensitive people, who one form or another we kind of have to get a hard shell at some point so we can, you know, keep ourselves safe. And we all have something that we do that's very creative, and it's like there's some sort of outlet for us that's there, and we all have that. You know, and I think the witch power, I think that thing, that otherness inside of us, you got me on a whole otherness kick. That's why that's where all this has been going for the last 20,000 minutes, is part of it. I think it's the thing that drives us to it. And I think that we're keeping it real. It, you know, it, keeps you fucking alive. Like, it's kept me alive. I don't know how many people I know who have said, if I wasn't a witch and I didn't know to do XYZ, I would have died like that night, or this thing would have happened. And I, you know, or I was lined up to go in this direction. And I, you know, I can look back on it now and clearly see that that was going to take me to a whole pile of shit, you know, mm-hmm. and if it weren't for the craft and these things intervening in my life in these ways, I would be this other person. I would be in a very different position. And that's the shit that I find. Like, those are the stories that I'm like, oh yeah, tell me more. Tell me more, because it's so much more fascinating than somebody's like TikTok video about the quote unquote purpose of jade. And which I, you know, all of that, just like plants. What's the meaning of mushrooms, Kobe? Like, fuck you. Meanings of it. How like self-centered human bullshit. Like, is that the meaning of something? Oh, God, I'm being nuts. So anyway, I'm going off on a tangent because you struck a chord of truth. And I feel like when we strike chords of truth on the show, we need to let that ring out, right? That witchcraft isn't necessarily about hugging trees and communing with, you know, the goddess, right? Like, it can be those things, and it includes those things often. But for a lot of us, it isn't, right? It's mm-hmm. something more. Mm-hmm. And that's a powerful thing to acknowledge. And everybody who's listening at home right now, you have that relationship yourself. Pat yourself on the fucking back. Like, seriously, because it's birthed from experience. And that is something, and you know, again, often happen to grow up a little too quickly, right? And I think that's powerful. I think so you said that to me, that struck out. I just had to go off on a tangent because that was a note that was played in this chorus. What would you say, you know, speaking of that, what would you say was your moment? Was your, like, the thing that witchcraft and your path is, you know, with plants or without plants in your life, that steered you away? Like, there, you know, obviously something, witchcraft has done something. Witchcraft has been a shield for you. And I want to know how, I guess is what I'm picking your brain. How has witchcraft saved your life, Kobe?
In so many different ways. You know, I mean, and I didn't have a bad childhood or anything like that. It wasn't terrible. Like, my parents got divorced, like most people's. And yeah, I was exposed to, like, a lot of, you know, conservative Christian ideas and things like that. And that was kind of damaging. And, you know, so I don't want to spin it like it was like overly terrible or anything like that. But there were definitely like some points of, you know, just major, like, emotional abuse, physical abuse in certain scenarios and things like that, that were sort of connected to my beliefs and spirituality and being a gay man and all that. And it's just always been there. It's always been this presence, you know, that even if I wasn't like actively studying or reading or practicing witchcraft related things, it's something that's always been a part of me. It's always been in there. It's like this dialogue that's just always going on between me and everything else around me. And there's been times in my life where I call them Library of Alexandria moments, where I would get found out or get in trouble or something would happen. And I would get rid of all of my books, all of my notebooks, everything that I had accumulated like up until that point. And I've done that like quite a few times throughout my life and have regretted like every single time that's happened. But like, no matter how hard I've tried to stamp it out and be something that I'm not, it always bubbles back up.
Well, Kobe, thank you so much. I'm so excited, A, about finally getting you on the show. I'm excited, B, for your new book that has come out and has been on my desk like for weeks now. It does not leave. It will not leave. I am excited about your event that you're putting on that is going to highlight very important aspects of witchcraft that a lot of people are trepidatious about. I'm excited about you coming to my event and being the Poison Path rep at Horticulture. That's going to be really fucking cool. And I'm excited about this book that you are writing now and whatever happens with it. And I hope that good things do come out of it. Even though I'm going to have all of your links and stuff in the show notes, if you were going to send people to like one place online to find out more about you, where would it be?
thepoisonersapothecary.com.
Boom. That's simple. All right. Well, everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. All right, that does it for this episode of the Modern Witch Podcast. If you want to check out the whole unedited version of the interview, which is just under 2 hours long, you can find that over on the Patreon archive, and I'll have that up in just a few days. So the discussion gets really good. We go super deep into why he really dove in as far as he did into the poison path, why he started the store, and his favorite, you know, plants to be working with, things that he stays away from, dosages, all of that kind of good stuff. We go into some neat stuff, and again, that's all over on the full unedited version, which you can get on the Patreon. That's patreon.com/modernwitchofficial. And if you're interested, you can just go on, check it out. There's a bunch of different tiers, very, very accessible. You should totally go check that out for sure. Again, that's patreon.com/modernwitchofficial. All my love to you for downloading, all my love to you for subscribing, all my love to you for liking and sharing. Very, very important. You know how this stuff works. Spread the word, help me spread the word. All of it really does truly help just make all of this possible. So thank you so much for the love. I send that love back to you. And I want to say that I'll see you next week with another episode of the Modern Witch Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. You can find out more at modernwitch.com. I'm Devin Hunter. I'll see you next week.
There are forces at work here, dark, incomprehensible forces.